Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is a great high-energy group. We're getting some really good networking done. Sorry to interrupt the video here in the front, but it's time to get back to work. So first of all, I've got a couple of announcements to make. One of those is that we included in the list of supporters, which is in the booklet that you have, there's a list of all the organizations that have been helping us out. Not included is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We want to thank them for their support as well. And now we want to get your views, we want to get your perspectives, we want to get your ideas, and we got a plan for that that Anna's going to tell you about. Anna?
Hi. So since we're limited on time today and we're not going to have the luxury of addressing a lot of your questions, we're passing around note cards right now. And if you could write down questions or ideas that you have that you want to share with us, the committee that planned this conference would like to reconvene together after the conference and go through these questions and see if we can feed some of these ideas into a newsletter that will be available to you after the conference via email. And it also could be used as an opportunity to really address the dialogue that you think needs to come forward in the future and in the near future. So please write down ideas or questions, and we'll try our best to respect them and to bring them forward. Thank you.
Okay, I'll save other announcements for later. Right now, I have the genuine pleasure, the honor, and the privilege of introducing our next speaker. I've been reading up on Mr. Conyers. He's serving now in his 24th term as a representative. From Michigan's 14th district. And there's just too much to say. I've been studying him all week, and I can't fit it all in. This is a man who was in the Congress when Medicare was passed. He's the man that introduced the bill to honor Dr. King with a holiday. And stuck with that for decades till it happened. Which, by the way, is important for us to keep in mind, because sticking with it till it happens is what he's all about and what we're all about here. He's the man who held historic hearings investigating election irregularities in 2004, which you probably remember. And just recently, I was watching C-SPAN or something, and I saw the man speak. It was the WikiLeaks investigation, and he said a number of important things. One of them was about the importance of free speech and how... He said, "It is our constitutional freedoms and our cherished civil rights that are the first to be sacrificed in the false sense of national security." There's too much to read, but let me just say one more point about him. About a year ago, I was at a national meeting of prominent physicians at one of our physician deals, and I was at a breakout group with 12 or so physicians, almost all of whom thought single payer was a good idea, but none of whom would stand up and say so at the microphone. It takes courage to stand up for what's right when everybody else is thinking the other way. It took courage for them, and it took courage for Congressman Conyers. He's a man that has that courage and has been standing up for single payer and health care justice for decades. He introduced the first single payer bill in 2003. And he's been introducing it in every Congress since. Even as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee and one of the senior and most respected members of Congress, he's been crisscrossing the country trying to organize the movement for single payer. And we thank him for it. We thank him for being here. Thank you, Congressman Conyers.
Thank you, everybody. Give Paul Borman, a great doctor, a round of applause for that introduction. I have him on retainer, and so you can see that he's doing quite a good job. He only made one mistake, and that there are some that say that I go back to the Hayes-Tilden era, but of course you don't know what that means. I'm so happy to be here. Margaret Flowers, a great doctor who sacrificed her own career to lead this movement, has to be acknowledged. But I also wanted you to know that Claire McGee and I just called Dennis Kucinich to let him know that he had a lot of friends here in Portland. We tried to call Michael Moore, too, but my dear Joel Siegel couldn't get the number. We had the numbers we had are wrong. And, you know, I knew Michael Moore. Well, he came into my office in Washington one day. He's from Flint, a worker, union man, activist. And he said, John, I want to tell you something. I just sold my house and car, borrowed all the money that I can, and I'm going to Hollywood to make a movie. And I said, oh. I'm in church. I said, this guy's going to hit me up for some money. I know what this is about. He didn't. But I had never seen Michael Moore with a camera in his hand all the years that I had known him. And I figured that he'd end up, and I told him so, in those Hollywood restaurants where the waiter's got some great idea that's going to, when he gets a break, he's going to really hit it rich. And I said, Michael, they'll be waiting for you when you get off the bus, man. The first thing he did was a hit. The second won an Oscar. Now that poor guy that I felt so sorry for is a multimillionaire. Michael, please answer my calls. So, you never know in this semi-capitalist system who's going to strike it rich, but we do know a lot of people are going to suffer in it. The inequality has been commented. And hasn't this been a marvelous turnout here in Portland, Oregon, with all the people? This is incredible. So I'll make my the idea I was saving for the conclusion I'm going to tell you now. Over one or more glasses of wine, I forgot what happened at Gorman's place last night, we determined that the one thing that is missing is that all of us across the states need to get together, if only for one day, all of us. We need this is Portland alone. We need to get together one day, everybody that understands what's going on, and everyone agreed with me, and the place that it ought to be is Portland, Oregon. Okay? Portland, Oregon. And it ought to be soon. Now, you know, I mean in the next couple months, spring or something like that, and it'll be a one-day conference. Everybody come to Portland. Now, of course, there'll be the day before the conference. That's 2 days. then there'll be the day after the conference. That's 3 days. So it's a one-day conference. You don't have to come early or stay late. But we all ought to put our bodies and hearts and mind and commitment on coming together and getting to know these 20-something states that Dr. Flowers has already identified, because there are people like us all over the country waiting for the clarion call, and I say they ought to come here to this city that's been so good and loyal and committed and with the daring ideas that have been exchanged here today. So as we do when I used to be chairman of the Judiciary Committee, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And all the no's leave the room and we won't even count you. Congressional democracy at work. Now, the one thing I wanted to do is try to relate this to everything that is going on. You know, it'd be nice if this was all we had to do. And it isn't. And the person that inspired me to this wider view, the greatest person that's influenced my political belief system, is Martin Luther King Jr. And when you boil it down, when you try to synthesize this incredible life, it's jobs, justice, and peace. And the part that is very interesting is justice. That means economic and political justice. Now, I've been to a number of events where justice and peace are the things that are lifted up. But guess what? If you haven't got a job, justice and peace aren't as nearly relevant. And I'm reluctant to say this in this audience. Health care is... There are people that would rather be sick or stay sick and have a job than have health care and no job. And so it's not accidental that jobs comes first. And the thing that we work on here and big time in our office is health care. Universal health care, single-payer health care, Medicare for all. We're working on the messaging. But the point is, though, that until we deal with the fact that in my city, 38% of the people in Detroit are unemployed. That's a depression. That's not a recession. That is a depression. And finally, we're just digging up some of the conversations with Bernanke, in which he admitted that this economic downturn is in many ways worse than the depression of the 30s. And I can believe that, because those subprime mortgages that were chopped up and rebundled and sent into the markets, economic markets around the world, affected every economy in the world. Everybody was affected. And it started by ripping off the poor and minorities who were worked into that situation. And then on top of it, the hedge fund operators bet against the stocks that they were selling. They played the market both ways. It's the most ruthless thing, and I am ashamed to tell you, not one of them have gone to prison yet. And they ought to. And they will. If I am the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee and have something to say about it, and I think that I do. And so these things all interact. The climate, global warming, the debt ceiling, the creation of jobs. And by the way, I've got a jobs bill in that a revision. How many people around the Hayes-Tilden era remember the Humphrey-Hawkins Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act? Give them a round of applause. Because we revised it. I was there for that, of course, and worked with Gus Hawkins, who was then the dean of the Congressional Black Caucus from Los Angeles, and, of course, Senator Hubert Humphrey. And we got that bill through. And what's at the heart of the whole question of creating jobs is the question that we resolved then, is that the federal government has a legitimate and constitutional duty to create work directly when unemployment rises over 10%. That's what's being debated, and that's what's creating so much vague rhetoric about jobs. Everybody's talking about jobs. Very little is being done about it. And I am respectfully asking you to join with those organizations here in and around this great city to help us move to that aspect. Now, I wanted to just say there's another fellow not here that's very important to me, and his name is Ed Schultz on MSNBC. He chairs our Congressional Black Caucus events every September, and the panel that he comes on is universal health care. This is the second year in a row that he's done that, and we're just so proud of him. But what about there's so many. Well, let's do it this way. Everybody that's in the healthcare field, profession, the doctors, the nurses, the scholars, please stand up and get your round of applause. Everybody that's in it. Look at that. Up, look at the balconies. Look around you. Look at a. Thank you. PNHP is correct. Most doctors want universal health care. And I'm so proud of that, because the AMA has done everything they can to befuddle the issues and confuse. And if it's not too inappropriate, I'd like to get a word in on behalf of the Tea Party activists. Well, what would you want to do that for, Chairman Conyers? Because most of them are people that have a right to be angry, but they've got their facts mixed up. 91% of all of the radio talk is conservative talk show. Limbo is just the number one, and Beck and Coulter, it goes on and on and on. 91%, that's Bill Press in his latest book on the subject. And so we can understand the confusion in their hearts and minds. And so I just wanted to thank particularly, in addition to Dr. Flowers, is Paul Hochschild and Mike Huntington. Aren't those guys good? Boy. So here's the thing that the few thoughts that I wanted to just close with. Look, you can never win a fight unless you're ready to get into a fight. And that's what we're in. It doesn't mean you have to be nasty or vindictive or attack one's personalities that don't agree with your character, of which there's way too much going on now. But there's also something I want to distinguish between facts and what people believe, even if they believe it wrongly, because facts alone will not win this debate. But I'll tell you what, but being accurate will go a long way to set the record straight. But I'll tell you what really does it is the experiences that all of us know and all of those that do not agree with us know is correct. That is, that this system is broken or doesn't even exist. It makes no sense. And even the people that are reaping the benefits, and there's that group of people that will never agree with us, they know that we are right. And we know that we are right. And they're beginning to see that we are unrelenting in our determination to change the health system in the United States of America. And we can do it. And we will do it. Now, this started, and I was so surprised to find out that Harry Truman had the audacity in the first year of his presidency to talk about, in effect, a universal single-payer health care bill. Then there was a line of leaders in the Congress. How many remember Ron Dellums, who wrote the health care bill? How many remember Marty Russo of Chicago, Illinois, that led the struggle? How many remember in the Congress now Dr. Jim McDermott of Washington, who is leading it? And he's working with me even to this day. And so there's a strong history being written, and we're learning how to message the story, to tell the daily struggles. Just suppose we organize all the people and their families who've been hurt or crushed by this rotten healthcare system. We would have an army of millions, and that's what we're about doing. So I don't have to ask you to join me in Portland, because you'll be here waiting for all of us from around America to get back in just a few months. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They don't call him that in Congress anymore, but I get to call him that in my house. And I'm proud to do it. The hard part is keeping up with this guy. But we do our best. So we're really thrilled to have the congressman here to help lead the way, as he has been for so long. As he was talking, I was reminded of a different struggle that took a long time. And the idea that we have to stick with it. You know, when the bill passed last year, I think there was a deflation in our energy. We thought, oh, how can we get this to happen? But, of course, people that have been at it for a long time know that it takes a long time. When the first Women's Rights Conference was held and they were writing their declaration, a woman named Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and I'm sure many of you recognize that name, insisted that the right to vote be included in the declaration. And people told her, no, that's ridiculous. That's too far-fetched. You're asking for too much. People won't respect you after that. And, of course, she knew that was wrong. It took decades, of course, to get to the women's vote, but it was still the right stand to take. And as the congressman just said, we know we're right about this. We just have to have the endurance that he's got to stick with it for so many years. I want to mention to you just some logistics. There's a pink form in your packet. Please fill out this pink form. We want today not to end today. We want today to be the start of a lot of action, and this is the way to let us know your thoughts, the kinds of things you want to do, and help us get information about you so we can keep in touch. The next group I want to introduce is the Mattis Hill Doctors. Are you guys here? There he is. Okay. So how many of you heard about the Mattis Hill Doctors? Everybody. They're fantastic, and I'll let them introduce themselves. Paul, why don't you come on up, and Mike, are you here? We've only got one Mattis Hill Doctor. Well, I'm Mattis Hill. There he is. At first, I thought theirs was a crazy idea. They wanted to do this mad as hell thing, and it seemed like the wrong angle to take, to start talking anger and rage and all that, at a time when those were really not very productive. But this group managed to figure out a way to carry that message across the country with their caravan visiting, I don't remember, 26 cities or something. And if you haven't seen the videos on their website from the mad as hell moment where people from all those cities tell their stories, it's really compelling, as Paul's going to tell you in a minute. So they learned a lot of lessons on the way across the country, and I think they're here to share those lessons learned with you now. Gentlemen, let's have a round of applause for the Mattis Hill Doctors.
Traveling across the country with these guys was like herding butterflies. Before we get started, I said this in the breakout session, but I just wanted to remind everybody of why we think you're here. Let me tell you why you're here. We think you're here because you're interested in advocating for single-payer health care. Okay? Well, one of the things we've learned traveling across the country and going down to California is that we're always talking to the choir. And if all we do is talk to the choir and say funny things and get a lot of applause and convince people that we're righteous and we've got the right solution, and everybody goes home feeling like, yeah, we believe in the right thing, and that's all we accomplish. We haven't accomplished anything. But we need to remember what the goal is. And the goal is to educate the public. There was a nurse that came up at the breakout session that said, you know, the majority of the people in the country really don't want single payer. It depends on how you ask it. And if in the context of the question you explain to people what single payer is, then you get a better response, what we would call a better response. So it's our job to educate people, our neighbors, to have a level of understanding that they can talk to their neighbors, and they can talk to their neighbors, and it's up to us to bring these discussions to our community. And that's what the goal of the Mad as Hell Doctors is to educate the community and give you guys the tools and the courage to talk to your communities. All right? So the way the Mad as Hell Doctors started was about, I don't know, 6 years ago now. I an ER doctor, I'm still actually working, and my job was driving me crazy, and I had some sense that it had something to do with the craziness that I was working in. I hadn't really thought about healthcare very much in terms of systems. And so I said, well, I wanted to make a cool video anyway, so I thought I'd make a video about why healthcare is so broken. And it was really an investigation, and the investigation led to the production of this video called Health, Money, and Fear. And what I found was people were really hungry and interested in it. It was in the hands of lots of people that were interested in it, but it was mostly people that were already sold on it. And then during the, I think it was late June or early July of the great healthcare reform debate of 2009, Gary Jelinek and Adam Klugman approached PNHP, approached Mike and myself, and said, you know, you guys should, like, go across the country in a painted van and talk to people and hold town halls and really talk up this single-payer thing, and you can call yourselves the Mad as Hell Doctors. And Mike and I rolled our eyes, and in the 24 hours for us to say, yeah, I guess we are mad as hell, and so that's what we did. So the way we accomplished this is that we got the names of people across the country from PNHP and from the list of people who had obtained my video, and we contacted those people and invited them to invite us to their community. And we would show up with speakers and video equipment, and we would be willing to make a presentation and have them participate in that presentation. And all we wanted from them was a venue, some publicity, and a commitment to carry on the flag, but that was just sort of unspoken. And it was really remarkable that we actually pulled this thing off. And then last fall, we went down to California in a similar way. And I think the real value in what we accomplished as we were doing this was we were building relationships. Nothing happens except through relationships. And that we were not only us building relationships with them, but every couple of weeks getting ready for the trip, people from these different communities would be on a conference call with us. So we were building relationships between the communities. And then there were little committees within the communities that were working with each other to create the event, and so that we were building relationships within communities. And I think that's the resources we need to tap into to sell this to our nation and our people. All right? So, is there an audio video thing? Oh, there it is. So, we have resources for people. If anybody wants us to help them make a presentation in their community, just contact us at Mad as Hell Doctors. There's this video available for whoever wants it down at the PNHP table downstairs. It's 48 minutes. And if you want to have a public meeting that lasts like an hour and a half, it's really good for 48-minute video, and then you've got a 40 minutes or so for question and answers, and I'm sure you won't have any trouble finding some primary care provider in your community who would be willing to just answer questions. They don't have to prepare a speech. They just have to answer questions, and it's very informative. Then the other thing we have is this resource disc, which is what we have to show at community events, and we have a list of. Oh, here it is. We've already arranged to make a number of presentations around Oregon, and these are available at the PNHP website. I mean, at the Mad as Hell Doctors website, or it will be soon, and they're available downstairs at the table. And if you want us to come to your community, just contact us. And we'll hold your hand, and all you need to do is give us a venue and some publicity. So to give you a flavor of the Mad as Hell Doctor's trip to D.C., the abridged version, if I can do this. Oh, that one, yeah. I see. I have to push it now? What am I doing? You want the fourth one down? Oh, the fifth one down. I don't count very well. There you go.
We need Congress to start listening to the American people who want and need national health insurance, and to stop listening to the private health insurance industry and the drug industry who are saying, don't do it.
Fast forward, 2009. Congress took on the challenge of health care reform. They said everything was on the table, but single-payer advocates weren't even let in the room. In response to the debate that wasn't happening, a group of mostly Oregon doctors traveled to Washington to take our message to the country. Until we recognized that health care is a human right, and we redesigned the system to reflect the current reality that we're all paying for everybody anyway, we'll never be able to control costs, cover everybody, and keep our government from slipping into insolvency. In the meantime, the noise coming out of Washington was enough to make us mad as hell.
I'm mad as hell! I'm not gonna take it anymore!
Right now I'm standing in Pioneer Courthouse Square, and we're on our way across the country, visiting a total of 26 cities on our way. We have organizers in each of those cities. We expect to see thousands of people on our trip.
This is about the industry manipulating public policy for profits.
I went to play at the playground to do things I like so much.
The United States is the only industrialized nation in which poor people die because they cannot afford medical care.
This playground is run by bullies, and they're all so big and mean. But this playground was made for all of us, and we're gonna change this scene.
The more people you get on the train, the cheaper it is to run it.
I'm mad as hell that profit has become the bottom line in our system. We've lost all side of humanity. People are talking about the bottom line, how much money they can make.
It is unacceptable that in the United States of America, where we do care for each other, where we do send our kids to school, where we do ensure our safety, where we protect ourselves from external threats that may or may not be real, this is a tragedy that's happening now, and we're not fixing it.
I'm pissed off because all of us won't give up a little bit, so all of us are better off.
Picked up a couple more of our docs today. We're like getting into full starting lineup, getting our groove on. Keep on keeping on for single payer, because that's what this is all about. Woo!
I would love to have us have a single payer system, because I think that's the only one that would sufficiently conserve our financial resources to make it possible for everybody to get care.
When you get sick in this country, the system just destroys so much of our pride and so much of who we are.
This is the United States of America. Let's get some morality.
They get to cover the healthy and the wealthy, and then they dump the poor and the sick on the government.
The insurance companies have divided us and conquered us. They turned us into left and right, conservatives and liberals. This is not an issue about politics. This is about human lives.
And none of my children can afford insurance. And they're being responsible, not having babies, because they don't have insurance. So I'm mad as hell because I'd like to become a grandmother.
Now, what we are seeing on this tour as we went across the country is appalling. It's much worse than I ever thought. 86% of Canadians approve of their health care. Why don't they? The VA system is a single payer funded by the public. It has 83% of the veterans approve the care in the VA, and it has the highest quality assurance of any hospital system in the country. Why don't they?
This is the setup that's been sniffed by the dogs to make sure that we're not doing anything dangerous. And I think the most dangerous thing we're doing is we're actually standing up and advocating for single-payer national health care.
Children are being left behind. There's a Pentagon spends more. While millions have no health care, it wastes billions waging war.
No matter how intransigent political systems may seem, we will overcome those barriers. We will go down that road. We will find the day when everyone in this country has health care for all, that we will have the system we seek to create, and that we will be the ones of whom it will be said years later, they led the path to social justice, they led the path to health care for all, they led the path to a better country and to a better world. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'd like to carry on the mood of that four-minute segment. Would everybody be willing to stand up and do a little networking? Now, what I meant, I didn't mean for you to have that much fun. Please be seated. Okay. Please be seated. Okay. Thank you. So what we learned on our trip was there was a lot of suffering going on because of our healthcare non-system. And we found people that were willing to stand up in front of a camera with their faces projected, as you saw, willing to say that. And I'm afraid too often many of our people are willing to suffer in silence, either because they're too sick or they're too broke to get up and say anything. And they're too afraid to, because they still depend on the few doctors and healthcare providers still willing to see them. We need to make these people brave, as you saw on the screen there. That's one of our goals that we had, was to allow that message to be heard. The others that you heard was building networks, like you just did. But this one was across the United States, and last fall it was across California. One of our functions was to be like a USO show. There's a lot of us troops out there working hard and sometimes feeling discouraged. And we need to inject fun into this battle, into this fight. So that's what we're doing here today also. But I wanted everyone to know that there was quite a crew that went on this trip. And so everybody's up here now. Bill Whitaker and Cheryl Simpson, Earl Elias. Bob and Linda Wickline, I think they're still here, our singers. Sam Metz and Joe Usterman, and Bob Seward. So you see most of the crew. And it wasn't easy. When you become advocates, there are times when you will look at each other and say, do I really want to know this person? And you can picture this crew sitting around a table in Bloomington, Indiana, at Rob Stone's house. We spent the whole day debating, arguing, yelling at each other, and then calming down. should we chain ourselves to the fence, the White House fence, or not?
Mike, that was 2 days.
That was a two-day episode. So I think I'd better yield the floor to whoever else will speak, but I just wanted you to mention there were many, many more stories. Yes, yes. Please insert the word improved Medicare for all. I think there's a metaphor that's useful here. There were twin Percheron horses born in 1965 called Medicare. One of them was adopted by this country, and it did a good job for a while, and then we stopped feeding it. And then we put lots of extra burden on its plow. We abused it, basically. And two decades after those two horses were born, a country called Taiwan adopted the other one and has used it well, has not abused it, has not overloaded it, and it is still functioning well now, 15 years later, with 70% approval rate by its citizens. Now we have this horse in this country unable to provide the service that it should, can't pay its providers well, and people say, shoot the horse. No. No, take good care of that horse. That's going to be our salvation to get single payer. Well, when I ask you to network, and I won't ask you to do it now, I had intended for us all to stand up like they did on the network show and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Let's do that sometime today, but not right now. Who wants to tell us lessons from the road?
Thank you. First, I'd like to honor Representative John Conyers. I think what you're seeing here is... He mentioned the word relentless, and I've used that to describe Paul and Mike. So thank you for being here. I'll try to keep this brief. There's a lot of stories. One that stands out in my mind, we were checking into the hotel, the Red Lion in Spokane, and there was a Canadian there checking in next to me, and he was a biker. He had his leathers on, and he'd biked down 500 miles from northern Canada. And so we just got to chatting, and he looked at my hat, because it was a mad-as-hell doctor's hat, and he said, what's that? I said, well, we're a group of doctors. We're going across the country to try to get health care for Americans. And these are his exact words. He said, why don't you Americans take care of your own people? Yeah, that's why we're doing this. The other one that sticks out, we were coming out of a town hall in Chicago, and a reporter came up to me, and she said, what's the biggest obstacle to health care, to universal health care? I was just kind of stuck there, and I said, I think it's ignorance. It's ignorance. Because if the American people ever figured out that other societies do this for half as much and everybody gets quality of care, they'd insist on it here. And the ignorance is, and this is a big thrust of this meeting today and what Paul and Mike are doing, is education. We have to win the hearts and minds. We have to convince everybody, every American should be able to see Margaret Flowers' movie. They should understand what's going on. Now, that brings me to another issue. Part of our job is to educate, but part of our job is to look at what the disinformation campaign is going on in this country, particularly right-wing radio and Fox. They are distracted. This is what I found out this fall when I was campaigning for Feingold back there, the hate for Obama. And we have to do something. We have to pass legislation. Hate speech should be against the law. And I think threatening congressmen, and that should be against the law. We have to look at this. There's a real problem in this country. They have 450 right-wing talkers. They're going from dawn to all night long, 7 days a week, and they have a lot of the lemmings back in my home state. I grew up, I'm almost ashamed to say, I grew up in Wisconsin because of the amount of ignorance there. They don't understand the role of the government either. So I think that's a long answer to a little incident that happened in Chicago. But I do believe that the education is going to be key to this whole thing. We can't talk to each other anymore. We all believe in this. We have to somehow convince Joe Beer Can out there that it's in his best interests. But anyway, thank you, Representative Conyers, for coming out here. Your life of leadership and conviction and courage. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Usterman. I'm so happy to see you all here today. It's fabulous. I just want to say a couple things. The last 30 years of my medical career, which was over 50 years, was spent taking care of injured workers as an occupational medicine physician. And those 30 years taught me repeatedly the fear that so many American workers live in every day, the fear that they're going to lose their jobs, the fear that they're going to lose their health insurance, can't take care of their families. And I remember we came across one gentleman in Spokane who said that his wife had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and his employer called him in and said, "We're going to have to let you go." He said, "Adding your wife to our insurance program is just going to cause our premiums to skyrocket. We can't afford it. We're going to have to let you go." So what my question is of all of our fellow Americans, what is it worth not to have to live with that fear? What is it worth to not to have to live with the fear of getting sick or losing your job because you get sick? What is that worth to us as a people to get rid of that fear? It's very pervasive. I tell you, a lot of you folks know what I'm talking about. Some of you don't know what I'm talking about because we're kind of on the front lines dealing with sick people. It's a terrific problem. Thank you.
And that eloquent gentleman was Joe Usterman, who drove that van across the country along with Earl. There he is. That was a hard vehicle to handle. I have just a quick statement. We in this room don't need to know anything about single payer. The ones who need to know about single payer are our state legislators. You want to know what you can do today when you get home? You can pick up the phone, you can write a letter, you can send an email to your state senator, your state representative. You can say, single payer is an important concept. I want you, legislator, to learn about it because I'm going to be bugging you, asking you questions for the rest of your term. That's what we need to do. Thank you.
Made in Oregon. Made in Oregon. You've heard of herding cats? Well, I organized this group. Imagine organizing doctors or herding doctors. Oh, my goodness. This is their third time around. First, it was across the nation, then down to California, And now the emphasis is going to be right on this state, within this state. Over the next month and a half, these gentlemen and ladies will be traveling across our state of Oregon exclusively. They're going to be spreading the word throughout the state. And it's important that you participate, all of you. That's why we're here. We're here, all of us, to activate all of you and to carry this forward. So here are the cities. I'm not going to name all, but believe me, if you can, we have this available downstairs. In fact, in the breakout groups, please attend the breakout groups this afternoon. It's all about activism, folks. It really is. We have a piece of legislation that's going to go forward in this state with your help. We have legislators who are supporting this, Dembro, Shields, and others. And we have to form what amounts to citizen lobbies. Citizen lobbies. It's up to all of us. We have to fight the big money interests. And as voters and citizens of this state, we can do it together. So I invite all of you to join all of us. Pick up one of these sheets if it's close by your community. And if it's not, we invite you to organize within your own communities. And as Paul had indicated, we will be happy to send one of these people to you, to your community. If you'll get the people together, find a locale, and so on, we will come and we will help you put that process together so that your neighbors will know what single payer is, why it's vital to their lives. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Bob Wickline, and I wrote the Mad as Hell Doctors theme song. And I have some people I would really love to thank. If it weren't for Dr. Margaret Flowers and David McClanahan, Paul Hockfield and Mike Huntington and Ann Feeney and Gary Jelinek and Adam Klugman, none of this would have all happened with me. They've given me opportunities to perform with them on the road. And right now, you all have been sitting for a long time. I want you to clap with me. Here we go. Wait, before you do, though, before you start clapping, I want you to do this. I want you to say, care for all.
Care for all.
Care for all.
Care for all.
You know, WMD come in many forms. Weapons of mass destruction. Weapons of mass deception, distortion, distraction, disruption. And what I'd like you to know is there are perpetrators of obstruction, gridlock, greed, and deceit. And those perpetrators are the healthcare industry and many of our public servants who have forgotten who they were sent there to serve. And these perpetrators threaten the health, safety, and security of our country. And they have become nothing but saboteurs of life, liberty, truth, justice, common sense, and common good. And I want you to join with me. We could do Mad as Hell or we can do Medicare for All, but I would rather go positive. And here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to say, care for all.
Care for all.
Now I want you to start clapping. Now when I say Medicare, I want you to say care for all. Here we go. Medicare for... No. That's when you're coming in. Here we go. You're on the care. Here we go. Medicare for all, because health care is a right. Medicare for all, time the U.S. saw the light. That the best health care plan is a single-payer plan. Now's the time to finally put it on the table. Now's the time to finally put it on the table. Louder.
Thank you, Bob.
That's tremendous. Oh, can you hear me? Really quickly, I want to just shout out to somebody who hasn't gotten a shout out here but deserves it. I said earlier that there were three of us here that were arrested in the Senate Finance Committee. Can I do a shout out to Mark Dudzik, who's here from the Labor Campaign for Single Payer? Mark, will you, give a hello? So, Chairman Conyers said that this is about not about facts and figures, but it's about our stories, and that's what Matt is Hell Doctors was about. What we heard going around was the stories of both patients and of the physicians in this country. We are seeing an epidemic of physicians who are in stages of grief in this country because they can't provide the care that they were trained to provide, and it's about sharing our stories, and that's how we heal ourselves. I wanted to invite Chairman Conyers to come back up on stage in case you have questions for him. We have just a few more minutes. And what we're asking for, since we only have about 10 minutes, is that if you would please come up and ask a specific question. Try to be as concise as you can so that everybody can get their question in. And I see some baskets that are going to go around to collect the cards, money. Not sure what they're for, but put something in them. All right, thanks.
Well, this is wonderful. No questions. Oh. Okay, one question. Let's make sure his mic's on. Okay, six questions, that's it.
No. Can you hear me now? Yes, first, I have had these wonderful doctors on my talk show on cable access TV a number of times in the past, and most of them, if not all of them, will be back on my show again on February 24th. So you'll be able to watch me interview them again about what they've been doing and what they plan to do further by going to my website and looking at the show.
That's an excellent question.
On cable TV.
Yeah, we appreciate
conversations with Dr. Don. The question for you is, I don't know where you get what you got from. You mentioned you got something else that's beyond the names you named, sir. And thank you for who you are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Hi. Congressman. Good to see you. I've been checking the Library of Congress website every day looking for H.R. 676. I'm wondering if you can tell us the status.
Well, yeah. It's been reintroduced, and we have 22 co-sponsors. In the 111th, we had 85. And here's a sub-question for Joel Siegel, my staff from Washington. Were there any new members co-sponsoring this year, Joel, that weren't on last year?
Not yet.
Not yet. They're all the same ones.
But the bill will be introduced. We've reserved H.R. 6.
Oh, we haven't introduced it yet.
Well, we're waiting for the bill clerk to call because Mr. Conyers will make sure we reserve
the bill. Oh, okay. All right. We have the co-sponsors, but we have not dropped the bill yet.
Great. I'll be able to start sleeping again at night. Thank you.
Thank you. Blumenauer, is he on it yet?
No.
Was he on it before?
No, none of the Oregon delegation.
Well, wait a minute. No. No, what? No, there was one member that was on it last time. DeFazio was on it last time, yeah. But he's not on it yet. But this, look, we're only in the second, the first month, you know. Yes, ma'am.
They listed about 21 states. I counted 21 states that were considering or had passed a single payer bill of some kind. I'd like to hear your perspective on what the process is to get the waivers through at the federal level to let that happen. Can it be a simple majority vote in the Senate, or can the Republicans filibuster it, or what's the deal? And how does it have to go through the House or just the Senate, or what?
Both.
It has to go Siegel both says for both. Every state?
No, it'd be a waiver for everybody, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You don't have to do it state by state. Bernie Sanders, as you know it, doing it. Yay, Bernie! And, by the way, when he was a congressman, he was on 676 all the time. So we're proud of Bernie Sanders.
And dovetailing on that question, I'm just wondering, in regards to the bill that Senators Wyden and Brown have put together for state waivers, how is that a route that could possibly get us there too? And if so, you know, strategically, do you see the state by state process as being a means by which we can get there? And ERISA, tell me about ERISA. What do we do with ERISA?
Let me explain this to you. Most members of the federal legislature regard themselves as geniuses. You have to understand that. So no matter who introduces what, there's always somebody with a little better wrinkle on it and that can do it a little better. So we let them get all that out of their system, and then we come back home and we get down to business. One of the reasons we want to start off here is because the next place, where did you suggest that we start off instead of Portland? What?
Me?
Yes, you.
No, I just mentioned Multnomah Falls because I have visitors coming there from all over.
Oh, well. Well, thank you. That's very persuasive and compelling. You got visitors, so we should all come from all over the USA to... No, I think we better stay in Portland. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. But from there, folks, we are going, unless if it's a majority sentiment, we're going to the Bay Area of California, home of Nancy Pelosi. And from there, we're going to Baltimore, Maryland, the home of Steny Hoyer. In other words, we're getting down to business. No more soft gloves, Conyers. We're going to have to face up to this. Now, Mr. Siegel, what about the ERISA aspect of this? Take the mic.
Oh, the mic? Okay.
Yeah, the mic.
Thank you, Chairman Conyers. I still call him chairman because he's the chairman, right?
Yeah.
The ERISA waiver will be, according to Dennis Kucinich and his staffer, the battle in Congress over the next 2 years will be about ERISA waiver.
Well, describe it.
ERISA waiver just means the federal government, usually through HHS, gives permission to the states to get federal dollars. So if a state wants to go single payer, like which Oregon will or Vermont, if they want to use Medicaid dollars to go to a single payer trust fund, they get the waiver. But the lobbyists and the Republicans... Okay. We're going to do everything they can to not grant that waiver, so that'll be the battle next 2 years.
Boy, now I'll get another staffer to explain what this staffer just said. Now, we have four people. It was clear. It was pretty clear. Now, I was just told we have 2 minutes and four people. So conduct yourselves accordingly.
Thank you for being here. I think you're familiar with the names of these two companies named Palmetto and NHIC.
Wait, repeat that, please.
Two companies named Palmetto and NHIC. They administer Medicare for the federal government. And recently, hundreds of doctors nationwide were in danger of going out of business because Palmetto refused to pay any of their claims until they threatened lawsuits, went to their congressman, whatever. So I'm wondering what entity oversees those companies that you can complain to when they're not going by the federal law to administer Medicare?
Okay, that's question one. Question two, ex-Detroiter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My question is about health insurance exchanges. It's the issue brought up with the federal government, and we're hearing about it in Oregon and the energy maybe being put towards it in the state of Oregon, about whether any energy at all in this state should be put towards this health insurance exchange thing.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Question number three.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I understand there's been a constitutional amendment introduced in the House by, I believe it was Donna Edwards, to abolish corporate personhood. And if I'm not mistaken, you're a co-signer?
I don't know if I am, but I will be. But it will be coming to my committee.
Well, will you do me a favor and ask Congressman DeFazio to sign on to that? Because we had a hell of a time getting him to sign on to 676.
Yeah. Well, some people, you know, they like to be asked before they come on. So, yes, I will ask him. All right. We'll keep this at question three. The question four.
Thank you. You must have a great memory. On a winning issue, I've been in the private insurance industry for about 30 years as an independent agent, and I've come to the point where I see that single-payer Medicare for All is the way to go.
Thank you.
And my question, yes, because I just can't serve all of my, I can't serve my clients. I have to turn them down most of the time. Yeah. It really breaks my heart. Anyway, Medicare clients, I can. So I'm concerned about the piratization, I guess some people call it privatization, of good government programs like Social Security and Medicare. And that's my question is, how can we use that, turn it around, and become our issue where we find out what the government's role is and how to stop the piratization, which, by the way, is something like, may I say, Medicare Advantage is just one step toward privatizing Medicare. Do we really want to do that?
Well, thank you for complimenting me on my ability to remember all those. Joel Siegel, answer all of these questions in 30 seconds. We know you can do it.
All right. No, you could do it better than me, but I'll give it a stab. I think the question about the exchanges. So I'm going to say something that I think is the truth. Why not have states opt for a single-payer exchange? In my opinion, as someone who studied healthcare for 20 years, I don't see any evidence that private insurance will ever work, regardless of any there's 1,300 private insurance plans since 48, so why would they work now? Yeah. And the theory of competition is the exchanges would create competition. Hey, I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. It has not worked in Massachusetts. They have cost overruns, they're cutting care, and I don't think it should be the basis of a national model. I think single payer will work as it already works everywhere else.
Thank you. What else?
Okay. What'd you call it, piratization? Medicare piratization. Thus far, all attempts to piratize Medicare has failed. But unless we are able to do what the Mattel doctors have done to educate that the problem is not Medicare, it's that Medicare feeds the corporate monster. It's called for-profit corporate hospitals. And drugs that cost 1,000% markup and medical technology, which is a $100 billion a year business, we got to educate that Medicare is the best program, it's the most efficient, but it's not sustainable if it feeds corporate medicine. So instead of privatizing Medicare, let's get rid of corporate medicine. Let's privatize them. I'm sorry, let's publicize them. So then there was five other questions? What was the other one?
So,
I'm sorry, but I don't know the answer to that question. Is there anyone else here that can answer it? Mr. Connors? Anybody else?
Wait, you work for me, buddy.
That's true.
I don't work for you. And by the way, all those great lines, you didn't put in any of my remarks. I noticed you're using them all.
I do the best I can. I don't know the answer about the court.
Okay, we'll call back to Washington and get the answer for the other three. Give Joel Siegel a round of applause. He's a good man. Good man.
Okay, it's time to switch gears. I want to thank the Mad as Hell Dockers. And the ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman Connors. Thank you. You were all given a homework assignment to go home today and call your state legislator and let them know that they should be in support of single payer. And I want to remember somebody. Representative Michael Dembro, would you stand up, please? Because it turns out there's one legislator who already got the message and had the courage to take it to the Oregon legislature. And because of that, we're all as energized and positive about single payer as we are because of his willingness. So thank you, Michael Dembro. I next want to I'm going to introduce Katie Robbins in a minute. She's in the back there. After her session, we're going to do some breakouts. Look in your packet for the afternoon breakout session descriptions. And while she's in between now and the breakout time, which is in about 15 minutes, I want you to think about whether you want to go to the statewide single-payer network breakout, which is here in the sanctuary, the legislation and legislative strategy session, which is in Daisy Bingham, which is next to Fuller Hall. That may be the place to talk about ERISA and other waiver issues. The education one, which is in the Buchan Building, Room 201. Media session, which is Buchan 202. Rural organizing, which is in 203. And a strategy and messaging in a time of budget cuts in room 101. So take a look at that. Decide where you want to go after the next session.
Youth and students in room
103. And youth and students in room 103. Thank you. Is that
Richard?
Of course. Thank you, Richard. I'm sorry? I don't see a Speakers Bureau breakout session on the... Maybe that's in the media and strategy. It's part of education. I'm sorry. I see it. So Speakers Bureau is in education in the Buchan Building, Room 201. So now we're fortunate to have with us today a national organizer for Healthcare Now, Katie Robbins. Katie's a nationwide single-payer advocacy organization. She's a firm believer in the human right to healthcare, and she works to support the growing network of single-payer health advocates nationwide. Thank you, Katie.
Folks, this is an amazing turnout. I would like to give a round of applause to all of the organizers who helped pull this together. I also want to give a shout out. Last year, or in 2009, many folks in Portland participated in the mobilization for Healthcare for All. And so not only were, you know, some of the Baucus 8 folks here today, but I believe we have some people who participated in civil disobedience at the private insurance company here in Portland. If you did, can you raise your hand or stand up and we can acknowledge that? Thank you. Great Kenny up there. I'm really optimistic about moving forward in Oregon. So I had a little bit of trouble getting in from the East Coast because there was horrible weather, and so I'm thrilled that I was whisked away to the beautiful West Coast. And I am actually we're launching a bit of a tour with Margaret Flowers and Mark Dudzik, and I were hitting some other places on the West Coast. We're very excited, and I realized that I planned this trip over my first wedding anniversary.
Oh.
So
so I'm in a little bit of hot water. But if people but if people followed healthcare now, you remember that last year I married for love and for healthcare. A few months before I tied the knot on February 2nd of 2010, my partner, 5 years, had a kidney stone, and because he did not want to expose himself to the costs of emergency room care, he self-treated at home. And so there was about a week where he was in excruciating pain, and he'd been uninsured for about 10 years as an artist. And so it became very clear and very personal to me that we needed to make a decision fast about how to get him some health insurance. But I say this because, you know, I think that the more we speak out about single payer, but also about how the crisis affects us personally, will help to give other people courage to speak out about how it affects them. And recently, you may have seen that Healthcare Now started a new campaign to collect testimonials about the healthcare crisis. And we are calling it, "Will You Cry for Me, John Boehner?" And look, we don't have anything against crying. We cry all the time. Our healthcare system is devastating. And so we've been really surprised. Well, it's not surprising, really, at the response. But if you go to willyoucryformejohnboehner.org, you can see all of the people who've signed on to the petition. And it's not only people who are expressing, you know, their own healthcare horror story, but also people are signing on to say, look, we need to protect our social insurance programs that are under attack, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Thank you. And we pledged to read all of the testimonials to Speaker Boehner, delivering a tissue for each story. So I encourage all of you to participate in this campaign and spread the word. So we're tasked in this session to talk about how to build a stronger movement for single payer. I think we're off to a pretty good start here in Oregon. Can you tell this is my first time here? Sorry, folks. But universally, there are some pretty simple lessons that that we can learn, and I actually have a short video that Jason said that he could put on for me during this session. Is he back there?
No, I'm trying to put the machine on right now.
Oh, okay. So before we get started with a more in-depth conversation, I just want to show this short 3-minute video on how to build a movement. Any moment now. Oh, you've got one, Paul? Not appropriate for this crowd. I can't really tell.
Yeah. He's doing something. Okay. Sorry, Brian's going to take a few less than 18 seconds.
Oh. All right. Well, I'll hold the floor. So, in addition to getting married for healthcare, I shamelessly pitched it to the New York Times. So you can also see a write-up on that in the New York Times vows section. Yeah, and it was one of the only times we were able to get Healthcare Now coverage in the Times. And in addition, it's important to note that they actually wouldn't print that I organized for single-payer healthcare. I had a battle with the editor, and he would only print that I organized for government health coverage for all. So, we're good? All right, with that, we're going to take it away.
If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen start to finish in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. See, it takes guts to be a first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a first follower is an underappreciated form of leadership. The first follower transforms a lone nut into a leader. If the leader is the flint, the first follower is the spark that really makes the fire. Now here's the second follower. This is a turning point. It's proof the first has done well. Now it's not a lone nut and it's not two nuts. Three is a crowd and a crowd is news. A movement must be public. Make sure outsiders see more than just the leader. Everyone needs to see the followers because new followers emulate followers, not the leader. Now here come two more people, then three more immediately. Now we've got momentum. This is the tipping point and now we have a movement. As more people jump in, it's no longer risky. If they were on the fence before, there's no reason not to join in now. They won't stand out, they won't be ridiculed, and they will be part of the in crowd if they hurry. And over the next minute, you'll see the rest who prefer to stay part of the crowd, because eventually they'd be ridiculed for not joining. And ladies and gentlemen, that is how a movement is made. So let's recap what we've learned. If you are a version of the shirtless dancing guy, all alone, remember the importance of nurturing your first few followers as equals, making everything clearly about the movement, not you. Be public, be easy to follow. But the biggest lesson here, did you catch it? Leadership is over-glorified. Yes, it started with the shirtless guy, and he'll get all the credit, but you saw what really happened. It was the first follower that transformed a lone nut into a leader. There's no movement without the first follower. See, we're told that we all need to be leaders, but that would be really ineffective. The best way to make a movement, if you really care, is to courageously follow and show others how to follow. When you find a lone nut doing something great, have the guts to be the first person to stand up and join in. If you've learned a lot about leadership and making a movement, then let's watch a movement happen, start to finish, in under 3 minutes and dissect some lessons. First, of course, a leader needs the guts to stand alone and look ridiculous. But what he's doing is so simple, it's almost instructional. This is key. You must be easy to follow. Now here comes the first follower with a crucial role. He publicly shows everyone else how to follow. Notice how the leader embraces him as an equal. So it's not about the leader anymore. It's about them, plural. Notice how he's calling to his friends to join in. See, it takes guts to be a first follower. You stand out and you brave ridicule yourself. Being a...
Essentially, I want to talk about some examples of statewide networks around the country, some lessons that we can learn from them, and also break down what some of the strengths and challenges and opportunities are, and threats are for moving forward with single payer at this time. So Healthcare Now has members and supporters in all 50 states, but as Margaret Flowers said earlier, there's about 20 state single payer bills, and most of these states have some form of statewide network supporting them. And I'm gonna talk about a couple states and in really broad strokes because we could probably spend all day talking about organizing in one. But essentially, the states I want to talk about are New York, Pennsylvania, California, and Vermont. In New York, New York was the first state to have a single-payer bill introduced. I could be wrong, but that's what one of the co-chairs of Single-Payer New York told me recently. So in the 90s, they had a single-payer bill introduced by... it was written actually by Richard Kirsch, who you may know as the executive director of Healthcare for America Now, so he, not to be confused with Healthcare Now. And they had a liberal coalition, groups across the state supporting this bill. It gets introduced year after year. In 2008, half the legislature was supporting single payer. The governor was a single payer supporter. They actually had a study done by the Urban Institute showing that single payer
provided the best coverage at the least cost to the state, and still it didn't go anywhere, essentially, in the state legislature. However, this network, Single Payer New York, that launched in 2008, used this as an opportunity to build in the grassroots. So they set a goal shortly after the election of Barack Obama to work to get coordinators in every county in New York State. And they thought about organizing on the congressional district level, but because congressional districts are so gerrymandered in New York State, it's not even like local organizing when you're looking at a district that looks like a set of headphones. So they made this goal of county coordinators, and they're slowly building up. And actually, we just had a meeting recently, and they're launching their Western New York chapter. So they continue to grow, despite the fact that they're having a real hard time getting any movement in the state legislature. Then we have a state like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is more conservative. Their activism started a little later in 2004. They had activists, residents of Pennsylvania, write their state legislation, and it was introduced for the first time. And slowly, every year, it gains more and more co-sponsors. They actually last year had 7 Republicans co-sponsoring their legislation. Right? That's pretty... Yes, that's worth a clap. We hear that a lot. How do we talk to conservatives, and how do we win the Republican vote for this issue? And I think that people in Pennsylvania certainly are leading the way. However, their strategy is very much talking about the fiscally conservative nature of single payer. They talk about how it can be good for business. These are all true. They're going and organizing in the Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if everybody here wants to do that or is a member of their Chamber of Commerce, but it's pretty subversive, really, when you think about it. So I admire the work that they're doing, but I think that you can see that there's a very concerted effort to appeal to Republicans, and now the state legislature is dominated by Republicans, the governors are Republicans, so it's important for their work, and in Healthcare for All Pennsylvania, they actually elected a Republican president of their organization. Then you have a state like California. California has passed single-payer legislation twice. It has been vetoed twice by Governor Schwarzenegger. Now they have a Democrat as governor, Jerry Brown, and I think everybody on the ground there knows that, you know, while they have a strong coalition of groups, they have the California Nurses Association, Single Payer Now, which is one of the strongest Healthcare Now affiliates. They do really serious grassroots outreach. They talk to people all over the state one-on-one. They have a postcard campaign, which has helped them to build up their database to 14,000 names, one by one, adding postcards, having conversations with human beings, and as Don Beckler would say, inoculating these people from the misinformation that's going to come from the opposition, from the private insurance industry. So this network is really admirable, and they're growing, but I think that they recognize that it's going to be a huge fight to pass single-payer legislation, even though it seems like stars are aligned. And now we have a state like Vermont, which is perhaps on the cusp of passing something that looks a little bit like single-payer. That's fantastic. And we have to be careful about, you know, how we portray the policy. We're still waiting to see what the legislation looks like. And, you know, the proposals that we've seen have definitely incorporated a lot of the elements that we advocate for as single-payer activists. So, you know, we're really going to keep pushing for that. But the model that was used there is, again, there was decades of organizing in the state of Vermont. People pushing Vermont for single-payer, Physicians for a National Health Program was there, and they had some pretty devastating, times when they thought they were going to win single-payer and they didn't. So a few years ago, a new dynamic entered with the Vermont Workers Center, an affiliate of Jobs with Justice, launching the Healthcare is a Human Right campaign.
And they didn't really talk about legislation. They actually made a concerted effort not to talk about funding and cost because they wanted to focus on specifically the right to health care, to raise the expectations for low-income and working people and reach a part of the population that typically hadn't been engaged in the health care for all fight. So they've done a phenomenal job. Both of the campaigns have, you know, the Vermont for single-payer folks, similar to the Pennsylvania folks, use that fiscally conservative message. They appeal to businesses. And then we have the Vermont Workers Center coming in and engaging the grassroots in a way that hadn't been done in a really tight campaign before. And they actually had a bill passed that included the principles to the right to health care that they outlined. And a call for Dr. William Shao to design three options for the state that would meet the human right to health care principles, and at least one of which would be single payer. So now the proposals are out, and we're anxiously waiting to see where this goes. But I think that you get the idea. A couple of these states that I've described, they're all doing amazing work, but we have got to figure out how to combine the grassroots energy with that legislative pressure. And I really think that that's a model that we can think about and how to expand that here in this state. Essentially, you know, an exercise that I like to do with single-payer groups across the country is called SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. But I decided I wanted to change it to SCOT today. So strengths, challenges, opportunities, and threats. Rather than weaknesses. And I think what we can see here in this state is that we have... I don't want to get booed again for mispronouncing this. We have phenomenal energy here in the grassroots. We had 50 endorsing organizations on today's event. That was really impressive. There's going to be a state bill, a powerful tool that we'll be able to engage the grassroots around. If Don Beckler, the chair of Single Payer Now in San Francisco, were here, he would say, put that on a postcard and get on the street corners and start getting people to sign on and support it. And actually, we have it will be circulating shortly. There's a small outreach guide that Healthcare Now worked on with Single Payer Now. The subtitle is Empowering Single Payer Activists to Be Organizers. And it breaks down what individuals can do to take leadership in their communities, to build our databases, to figure out how we can communicate regularly with people about this issue. So the foundation is very good for moving forward. We've had the call to urge all of you to call your legislators, but I want to take that one step further and say this group shouldn't just be calling their legislators. You folks need to be calling your neighbors and your coworkers and your friends and anyone you can, your affiliate organizations, and get everybody you know to call your legislators. Another strength is that the Mattis Health doctors already have a tour planned. That's amazing. So building on this energy will be tremendous. In terms of challenges, we have the challenges that every single-payer advocate faces. We have tremendous opposition. They are organized. They are well-funded. Typically, we're not. Well-funded. We're organized. And... there is what's being called an austerity agenda, which I mentioned earlier, which is an attack on all of our social insurance programs. So many of us are also in a defensive mode to protect the gains that we have made with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. I was reading an article that talked about the attack on Medicaid alone. And what we're seeing is because states are in such a fiscal crisis, they're looking to Medicaid to cut benefits, to cut services, and enrollees. And that's something that I think is critical to align with. In advocating for improved Medicare for all, we need to maintain the social insurance programs that do work and continue to fight for what we really need.
there's this call for reducing the deficit and getting a handle on the deficit, and our message with Healthcare Now has consistently been, if you are serious about deficit reduction, you will look at taxing the wealthy, cutting the military budget, and looking to a single-payer healthcare system, which is guaranteed to contain costs. We have a simple postcard with that messaging on it, and going out and talking to people about this is not hard. You know, if we put it in a context of what's happening right now in this nation and what people can do about it, it's empowering. So, so within crisis, there is opportunity. Another very powerful moment I had in the past week, I was in Vermont at the presentation of Dr. William Shao to the Vermont State Legislature on these proposed plans, and he started his presentation out by saying that as a nation, well, first of all, he'd given up on the United States to do anything meaningful about healthcare reform. And so the fact that they pulled this international expert on health policy into Vermont to perform the study is pretty impressive. He said that in 5 years, we as a nation are again going to have to deal with healthcare reform. So this is going to come up again sooner than we even think. The work we do now, here, locally, in our communities, is going to build for the next round, which is going to be here much sooner than we think. So that is a real takeaway. I think that moving forward, we're going to have more discussions in the breakout groups, and I think we need to have as much time as possible for that. So I'm going to conclude my remarks here and hope that we can move out into the breakout groups that are listed in the agenda, and then we're going to come back as a group to report what we've found, any decisions or any next steps that we've identified together. So thanks again for having me here. It's really been an honor to talk with you. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks to Katie. That was fabulous. Well, as the moderator, I failed in my most important duty, which is to keep us on time. We're about 15 minutes behind. Let me ask you to pull out your schedule and take a look at the last box and just change the time. We're going to take a break now until 3 o'clock. Those groups start at 3 and we'll go till 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, your group ends and you come back here for the report backs, okay? Now, every group, your first job in the groups is to pick a reporter. One person is going to keep track of what that group came up with and return back here with 1 minute of what that group said in an hour. So, we break now. Groups start at 3, groups end at 4, and we reconvene back here at 4:15. Thanks, everybody.